Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bow Hunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. And coming up in August, they're going to be running their Black Friday in August sale. So check them out on social media, follow along with them. I think Instagram is probably the best place to check that out. And they've got someone new in charge of all their media staffers, all the podcasts and all of that. And that guy is Nate Sellers. You may know him as Average Jack Archery. So he's going to be coordinating all of this and really excited to be working with Nate. I think I mentioned that maybe on the beginning of the last podcast, but I've been talking with him. And I think for this quarter, as we go into the colder seasons here up, at least in the north, this is going to be given away at the end of the third quarter, so beginning of October, we're going to go with the Elkins vest, which is that mid-weight vest for those cool mornings, kind of like warmer afternoon sits, with the Casper base layers, which are the thicker base layers that have the heat boost built right in, and then their brand new Ames gloves that are specifically designed for bow hunters. They've got that, three fingers covered, the index finger is open, and the thumb. So if you're a guy that likes to play on your phone, you can do that. Or if you need to use a release, or you need just a little bit better tactility, those are killer gloves. So that's what we're going to be giving away for this quarter three. But in the meantime, go over, check out the site, check out the sale. And they have that system builder too. So you can put in, what hunt you're going on, what kind of clothing you're looking for, and it will point you in the direction that you need to go. So that being said, really excited for this upcoming season. It's becoming real now. We're past the 4th of July. We're done with the last show of the season, at least for us. So now it's all whitetail all the time. We're not doing any elk hunts or anything like that. Frank and Ernie are going to Colorado. John doesn't look like he's going to be done with his house even by the beginning of our bow season. But we're getting into the final planning stages of our Patreon hunt. And from the Mobile Hunter Expo, I spoke with the guys at Trophy Line Weston, such a great guy. sent us a huge package. So tons of stuff to be given away at the Patreon hunt. Really looking forward to that. You know, these guys are coming from, you know, Texas, Rhode Island, New York, and want to make sure that they have a great experience. But also, you know, like I said, anybody who supports this show, we want to make sure that it's passed along to the listeners and the people, you know, the patrons that do support the show. And right now, Redline, they also have a sale going on, 25% off. You can just use code REDLINEFRIEND and save 25% on any of the stuff they've got. I can't recommend their quivers enough. I did get one of the torch bow sights. I really want to check that out. I think it solves some of the problems that I have with some of the sites that are out there as far as like sight lights. I know different states have different rules for electronics, etc. But being able to see those pins in all, you know, indoor and outdoor, I think is pretty important. So really looking forward to checking that out. And, you know, all the new stuff, you know, Genesis 3D with their camera arm, picked that up. I got a new fourth arrow fluid head, just all the stuff we're looking forward to for this season. Talk a lot about a lot of the sponsors on this podcast, Spartan Forge in particular. That new LiDAR is pretty slick. You got to check that out. Go to spartanforge.ai. You can use code BOWHUNTER to save 25% over there as well. You know, Latitude's got their new sticks coming out. They are shipping. Yes, it's unfortunate that the dealers got to put in their orders first before the pre-order. But they are starting to land. There's lots of people that are getting them. So if you ordered some, they're on the way. But it's just unfortunate the way that it works. It just happened. Lucky Buck, we put more Lucky Buck out up in the UP. I got some pictures I'm going to share today, tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this. The deer that Mark's got coming in Missouri. And, oh my God, these deer are incredible. And we got some decent bucks on camera up in the UP as well. So pretty excited about that. Obviously, Zinger Canati, those guys, just did a podcast with them. Good friends. You know, go support them. Just try them, you know, for the $20 or whatever it costs to throw those on the back of your arrows for the ease of use. Super cool, super easy. And then Big Shot Targets. One of the things shooting this trad bow with the Big Shot Targets is that deer target is based on the size of like 110-pound deer. So it's like you're shooting at a real deer, like getting the size, understanding the distance, like what the deer looks like at 30 yards, at 20 yards, at 10 yards, at 5 yards. Super cool thing with them at Big Shot Targets. And you can save 10% over there by using code BOWHUNTER as well. But this podcast is a good friend of mine, Joe Davis. He's one of the Patreons. He's one of the guys that killed at the hunt. He was with us in PA, with the Latitude guys, with the Zinger guys, host of the Generations of Hunt podcast. Just did a podcast with the dude, the guys from Latitude, the guys that are editing and producing Grit. And definitely go check that one out. It gives a lot of insight on how they're doing that over there. But this podcast, we talk a little bit about mobile hunting on public land. We talk about the expo. We talk about woodsmanship. Kind of goes all over the place, but I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. You know, obviously, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/bowhunterchroniclespodcast. You can check it out on links on the website, on Instagram, any of the links that we've got, you can find our Patreon. But if Patreon's not for you, not a big deal. We appreciate everybody that listens. Just tell somebody about the episode. Tell somebody about one of the episodes. Tell us what we can do better if you think we suck. But anyways, I know you're going to enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And tonight I'm with Joe Davis, host of the Generations to Hunt podcast. He's a Patreon, a fellow podcast host, and I'd like to think that he's a friend, but, you know, sometimes your friends can be like frenemies, and maybe that's what I am to him. I've definitely influenced him negatively in some ways. As well as the Patreon group has definitely brought out Joe's true colors. So I want to, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But he was at the Mobile Hunters Expo. We were also together at the Great American Outdoors Show. So I want to talk a little bit about experiences from the Mobile Hunters Expo. But there's a couple things I want to talk about beforehand. So how are you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Was that an accurate description of our relationship?
I think so. It's mostly just business. we don't have no friendships. As friends don't make friends do what we did. And if you know anything about shows, you don't talk about shows after you leave the show. So, but yeah, man, it's always been a good friendship, and I really thank you for our word of wisdom that you gave me.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing, like from the. I want to get into your like hunting background, because you're one of these guys that, you know, has leased property in the past, as food plots, have some private land that you hunt. And I want to know, like, first of all, like your hunting style and how you came up, but then how does the mobile hunting thing play into that? Because generally speaking, and I mean, I was just up north, and we're going to have a podcast coming out about that here in the next couple of weeks, and did some habitat improvements, had Jared from the Habitat podcast come up and go over, walk the property and kind of look through the lens of the Habitat guy, or like how you'd set up a property. And it was really weird for me to put on a different hat of like not being like hunting mobile everywhere, every time, you know, like, oh, this is where you would set up your stand. This is how you would access it, like every single time. And I guess you kind of do that a little bit, you know, when you find a good spot and you say, okay, this is how I'm going to access it. That's the tree I hunt. This is why. But I feel like on private land or like some of that stuff, it's a little bit more set in stone, where it's like, why would you want to hunt mobile or like go through the process of like setting up your sticks and all that shit every single time, you know? So like, how did you grow up hunting, and then what is it evolved into?
So I grew up in a small farming community, and like you kind of just say, hey, I'm going out hunting this weekend. Like your buddies would say that. And then you're like, oh, well, I'm with it. So I got my hunter education when I was like 13, and my dad took me out a couple times, but like I love my dad to death, but he wasn't really he was a traditional hunter, I guess you would say. Just take me out and just like, whatever you look back, you're like, wow, we weren't ever going to see anything. But like I kind of progressed, went out a couple times here or there on opening day and all that. And then I would go up to camp with my dad and all that. But I moved away. I moved to a bigger city. I moved out to Grand Rapids, started my career and all that. And I kind of lost hunting for a little bit. And I kind of drifted away from my dad, since we didn't have that common thing. And when I got in my maybe early 20s, you know, like 22, 23, I really noticed that my dad was, you know, getting of age, and I didn't really want to lose that connection with them, because sometimes are really special, and I didn't want to lose them. So I say, hey, I want to go start going to deer camp again. So I started going to deer camp with them again, and then I did the gun. Then I got a crossbow, and then
we're not friends anymore.
I know, that's what. Well, I lived in the city. That's what you do. You get a crossbow and all that. So I shot, you know, some deer with the crossbow and the gun that season, and I was like, well, I got money, I'm gonna go buy a bow. And then it kind of just was a full blown addiction after that. I had a bow. I remember my dad saying this when I was younger. When he said, you can't pull. If when you pull this bow back, you can start bow hunting. And like, it was like 60 pounds, and I was like 13, and there's no way I could pull it back. I was a little scrawny kid. But then it went just full of bow and addiction, dude. I just bow hunting. Like, I almost gave up the gun. I was like, no. And then the last two seasons before this one, I didn't even shoot a gun during season. I was just full blown deer. So, and then to go into like my styles, you know, I we I share a lease with my brother-in-law and his son, and we don't shoot does on it. And then we just shoot basically Pope and Young is our minimum probably right now. And I've eaten tags for the last 2 years chasing giants. And I have no problem doing that. I'll do that all over again. But this last couple of years, last year in the most general, I kind of found the greater side of hunting, and it's not about the trophy anymore. It's about the camaraderie. So I think like once I'm gone, no one's going to care about my taxidermy. No one cares about that. So the memories of getting that taxidermy is going to be a lot more better than the size of that deer to me.
So how do you guys, like, how did you, when you got into the bow hunting and it was a full blown addiction, like what was your hunting style? Like, cause you can be, I don't know why, but you could be addicted to hunting and be like, I'm going to go to this ladder stand every single day and watch these deer in this wide open cornfield. And it's like the coolest thing ever. Or you can be like obsessed about it. You could be like map scouting every piece of public land, every piece of water access, and I think that speaks more to like our listeners, right? Like right. Is a mix of somewhere in there, like gravitating from the ladder stand to, you know, not full blown like Jake Bush status where you're 300 days in the woods or whatever, but like, where were you at? Like, how did that progression go?
So like, let me like disclose this. Like, I am not a big buck killer or nothing like that. I'm just kind of in my mindset, and where I'm at is where I'm at, and where you're going to be at is different than me. So, but, we started like up north, we're hunting big woods. It was big woods, public land stuff. So there was no fields around me and all that. And then back home, it was all fields. And so it was hard to, what was working down here didn't work up there. So, like, I learned from basically being in big woods to kind of go into the woods more and then hunt in the edges. But we did have a couple, you know, double sit stands and all that. But I bought a climber right off the rip, right when I got my bow. And that's how I kind of went in there, and that's how I started. And then I bought a mobile platform at XOP and kind of went on there. And then I just slowly lost weight, you know, financially got better support, bought a lighter stand and all that. So last year, I think it on without presets and all that, I probably sat maybe 3 presets and probably 30 to 50 mobile sets on lease or public land. So,
and when you're on your lease, like how does that play out? Like for the, like mobile hunting, because most of the time, I mean, I guess how big is your lease?
So it's kind of a unique scenario. Like it's like 170 acres, but that sounds awesome. But like 120 of it, you can't even hunt. It's just all open bean or cornfield that is on a main road and all that. You can't hunt that. So we have like 20 acres of woods. And that's split up between like a 16 acre and then a 4 acre strip on the other side of the road and all that. So, and that one's mostly all cedar, like a little, not a cedar swamp, but it's just like small cedar saplings, basically. I mean, the biggest tree that I sat over there that I could fit in was no bigger than, I would say, a basketball pole. You know, 7 inches around, maybe 6 inches around, not even that.
So, but that's my point. Like, yeah. So on a property like that, I mean, I think like my parents have 5 acres, and depending on how it lays out, the way that you say it, it seems like it would be like your general 5 acre parcel, just 3 of them stacked end to end, right? So you can see from one side to the other, like how. There's got to be only one or two spots where the deer move through there.
Is it just- well, I can tell you this, that my my public or my private piece has more pressure than probably any public in my county. Because if I should show you a map, there's 21 stands or blinds and touching our property. 21 and less than 20 odd acres. It's crazy. So that's why you have to be mobile, man. They're pushing. They come in opening day. The deer are changing. Never stop changing, dude. There is no pattern to them. Deer don't do like what people see. Like you rattle at these deer, they're gone. They know that trick. So these deer are really heavily pressured. It's just that's why you have to be mobile, and you get these generation old does and all that, and they know where all these presets are. So you have to be. My brother-in-law, he's a little less mobile than me. And he does decent, but he is a gun and crossbow only hunter. So he has a little bit of an advantage for taking them out, but he mostly gets them in guns. So being just a bow hunter on these leases, I think in that area, I'm the only one that's shooting with a vertical bow. I don't think any of my neighbors shoot with a vertical bow. So. You kind of have to work it in your advantage of that's why. And that's why I stay so mobile in that area, because I can go out and I can see where I know where these guys are being sitting. So I'm going to play the opposite of where they're sitting and all that.
So I guess and that's why I wanted to talk about this a little bit, because yeah. You have a much different perspective than I do. And I guess it's a little bit the same. Like when I walk onto our property in the UP, like there's one really good spot that's set up and there's another one that's okay. But for the most part, I'm going to bring all my stuff and I'm going to go set up where I think the deer are. And it's just kind of like where people don't want to go. But ours is all thick, nasty cedar swamp. So it's not necessarily a pressure game as much as it is like,
have you ever been overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot seed mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalized Seed has developed a seed program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalized Seed has two core mixes, the Nitro Boost and Carbon Load, to keep it simple. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is the fall plot mix, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen different seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple, but it gets even better. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season and saving you money by needing less Roundup and less fertilizer each season. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. Vitalized Seed, make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizedseed.com.
The deer have all this property to go to, like let's go where the deer are rather than where it's convenient for us, right? But for you, and I've had this conversation with other people, my cousin's husband being one of them, hunts the same kind of scenario as you do. It's these little wood chunks with all this farmland around, and he was always like, man, I'd sit there and these bucks would move pass me over there, like just out of range or in the thick stuff. And I'm like, well, why don't you just move over there? Well, then I got to take all my stuff. And I'm like, dude, I think that's probably what you need to do. So from your perspective, like how does mobile hunting help guys on these tracks of private land? Cause I guess I always think of it, and we always hear about saddle hunting and mobile hunting being for the guys that got to go in deep, that got to go in 2 miles, that they want to cut down their, you know, weight and make things more efficient. So how does that translate to like the Mobile Hunters Expo, like to all that gear?
I think it's a great format for people just because every sit's a new sit. And like I said, the property's evolving and, you know, changing every day. And that's what I really like took apart from the year prior, just because I did do a lot of presets, or and I did a couple of mobile sits, and I noticed my mobile sits were drastically better. And I had to implement that because I'm hunting a target buck, and this, he's so edumacated because of the pressure and all that. And you gotta evolve. And what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Like you keep doing the same thing and you don't get the results you want, and you keep trying it. Why are you doing that? So I had to do something, and you know, mobile hunting was like the craze or whatever, but I just thought it was evolving as a hunter, just changing your style. You know, everything works, you know. Hey, I sit on a blind too sometimes, but it's kind of what you have to do to get on some of these big deer. I mean, these big pressure deer in these small hunted pressure zones are just really difficult. And we have a high buck to doe ratio, and just like our rut activity is non-existent. So everybody said, well, you maybe get them during the rut. It doesn't happen like that here. And it might just be a unique partial, you know, in our zone or something. I might have just a unique scenario, but I definitely think it's helped me out being a hunter 100 times more than just having 1,000-acre lot and I can find any deer, because that's how I ultimately got them deer in an unknown territory up at your camp last year. Is I was using hunting pressure to my advantage. And I think that's the best thing. If you can't predict the deer, at least you can predict people, because they're going to do the same thing and over and over again.
So you brought up the Patreon hunt. So we're going to say, I said, you know, when Joe as a hunter, like I was thinking about this when you were talking about your brother-in-law and how he hunts, like, I think if your brother-in-law maybe would just call you a bitch, you'd go ahead and go kill something, because that's what happened on this hunt. Nobody was seeing any deer, and Joe goes out and he's passing deer left and right. Every sit, he's like, yeah, I saw a couple. I just couldn't shoot them. It was a doe with a little one, and the guys were razzing on him. And the last night, he's the one that came back with the doe family group. He shot the mom and the turned out to be a button buck, but you know, and he just said, you guys called me a bitch, and mama didn't raise no bitch, so here you go.
I tagged the same as any other doe, so I don't, in my eyes, but I mean, that's like, that's the beautiful thing about camaraderie is, man, you can, like, I was going up there, I was like, oh, I ain't gonna shoot this. I'm not gonna be that guy. But then you kind of go up there and you just kind of talk to people and all that, and they're just like, who gives? If it's legal, let's do it. Like, let's just have fun with it. And then I felt bad because I was seeing stuff and passing stuff and no one's like even seeing it. I thought I was the first day back. I was like, oh, there's gonna be like 60 deer on the wall or on the pole. And no one even seen anything. I think I was like, uh-oh. So,
yeah. So Joe wanted to make sure that didn't happen. And I think you're right. I think what you said earlier was that, like, that was like the memories, like those deer are going to be gone, like long gone. There may be photos or whatever, but that story, that you know, those relationships, everything that was built was, you know, worth it in spades for like just being that guy. Like, excuse me. Everybody probably did, you know, give you a little crap when it was a button buck, and probably when you got it back, you were like, oops. But at the same time, it was a riot when you got back to camp. So it, like, what does it really matter at that point?
I mean, if you don't have people making fun of you or razzing you, I don't think they're really your friends then. Because, and that's the beauty thing about this. Like, I out of that camp, I don't even know if I met anyone in person besides you before that camp. And I only met you the one time, well, besides TAC for like 30 seconds. But I think besides that, I'd never met them. And by the time I left there, I had at least a dozen phone numbers that I could call anytime and we could share any moment and have laughs and talk for 30, 20 minutes on the phone. No problem.
And that was what was fun is, you know, when we got to the Mobile Hunters Expo, like on Saturday, like the amount of people that were there, like from that hunt. And it was like you were back in camp again. And that's, you know, Jacob Emery put together a little video from the expo, and it's like, if you go on his Instagram, I think it's like DO3 Outdoors or something like that. But he put together like a little reel and he just went around and interviewed like Dan and Greg Staggs and Rendell and, you know, a bunch of other people, Lane. And basically that's what everybody said. They were like, we don't care about the deer. We don't care about like the gear is cool, but this is like the place where you can go and meet your friends that you maybe have only met online. Maybe you've only seen like one time a year, and it just rekindles like all of that stuff. And like, I was, you know, tried to impart that upon people. Like when that, like, that's the way that I feel about the Total Archery Challenge. Like we go up there and it's the same thing. It's like deer camp in July or June. And this was like, you know, the next iteration of that. And so with this, we talked about it a little bit earlier, is we kind of get jaded like when we go to these places, because we kind of like know or have talked to like all these personalities. So it's like, you know, just seeing your friends again or like meeting up with your, you know, guys. And we've seen all the gear because we're so close to all of it. But you talked about it on your podcast that you did with the videographers for Latitude on Grit. And you were talking about like the caliber of the show for people who would listen to either one of our podcasts. Like, what was your take on the show itself?
I personally think it was one of the best shows in Michigan. And I've been to some dinkers in Michigan. I don't know how they call them, outdoor expo or deer and turkey expo and all that. So
brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Like, it, I think it's a really, like, if you remove the people that you want to talk to, like, besides product standpoint, it's probably the best show in Michigan. And I don't know how the tri-state area is, but I think it's going to give them a run for their money for the mass quantity of people that you can run into and actually put hands on stuff and actually dive and ask questions to somebody. Because retailers, they basically get the box and they kind of can go from there. That's what they can tell you. But the manufacturers are going to go way deeper into some of these items and all that. And then some shops only carry, you know, one set of sticks and one set of brand of saddles. Well, you got five saddles to try from. I mean, you never sat in one. You can go sit in five in one sitting and know by the end of the day. You don't have to pull the trigger that day either. So,
yeah, I think it was a very, very targeted show. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but they only do them in like a couple of shows a year. So like last year was Ohio, and I don't know if they did a second one, but they did one this year in Tennessee and then one up here in Michigan. So I think next year they're doing one like in PA, because I saw something where they were looking for speakers who, you know, are known killers like from that area. And that was cool. The seminars, the people that are talking, the Q&A type stuff with all these guys, like, it's great where you can listen to a podcast, but you don't always get your questions answered, or you feel like some things like get glossed over that you want more information about, and you just don't have the ability to just reach out to those guys and ask them. And for the most part, these guys are, you know, extremely accessible at these shows. So, you know, tons and tons of guys that I've had on the podcast were there, you know, one in just about every booth. So the amount of knowledge that's in that room and the amount of like people in like the industry that I think we're drawn to, is really there. And I think, you know, it could be expanded upon a little bit where there's no, like, it's great that it was all the mobile hunting stuff. But I think one thing, like, so if you go through when you talk about gear, like, okay, so the saddle stuff, stuff you can't see everywhere, stuff you want to compare side by side. Last year you had Huntworth in Ohio, and this year Osseo Gear, but I don't think that there was any other like clothing companies. So it's cool that those are companies that you can't see probably like anywhere else without like trying to order it online, but it would be nice to see some of that stuff. And then some of like the pack manufacturers, like, I mean, they have them at the tax, and it's probably a little bit more beneficial for them there because of the Western hunting and the amount of like total archery challenges that there are in the West, for, you know, Kafaru or EXO or any of these, you know, companies to be there. But I'd like to see some of that stuff, like some of the stuff where you can't just go to your local store and get it. And maybe some of the stuff you can't really just easily buy off Amazon and then ship back, you know, that's what I would like to see, I think, expanded upon. But what were some of the things at the show that like surprised you or that you were like impressed with that you weren't expecting?
I think like the biggest thing was just like if you just say show in general, just like the actual like staffing and all that. I mean, everybody there that was, you know, part of that system was pretty well informed, I think, and all that. So it was a great, like I got media passes and I've communicated before that. So it was just from a vendor or media person. It was great. They had communication the whole time. I can't imagine some of these people, you know, you're not even knowing where you're going to be because, like, they were showing me where I park and all this stuff. So that was, like, the great side of that. And then just as, like, a consumer side, I think it was really just, like, having, like, they, I don't know if they didn't do this on purpose, but they didn't have gutter salesmen there. They didn't have window glass and washing stations there. Like, they kept it all pretty well hunting driven, outdoor driven, and all that. So that was a great thing because, like I said in the I don't want to call it outdoor show in Michigan. You get there and literally there's one booth of that. The rest are African safaris and all this stuff. I'm not knocking that, but that's not what I want to see. I don't want to see that. And then I don't want to spend $50 on a bag of beef jerky. And that's all you see at these shows. So the select, when I was going through the map and all that, it was really cool that they made it a point to be all, you know, driven. And it was super cool that they're mostly, all these ones are small businesses, and that's like all these guys are hustling, man. And that, I have mad respect for them. And it's not like they were down the road. Some of these people drove a long ways to, you know, talk some product and talk some gear.
TX5 out of Texas.
Yeah.
You know, from a product standpoint though, like what was one thing that you were glad that you were able to get your hands on or try, that you probably wouldn't have? I guess maybe we'll even say, like, what did you buy there?
What did I buy there? I didn't buy a Damascus knife, if that's what you're asking. But, I bought some like Ader stuff, and I think that I did buy some other stuff, but it was mostly just accessories because I'm pretty well dialed what I'm going to work for me. I don't need no really new, whistles and bells and whistles and stuff. So it was just like the small stuff, just like just fine tuning my pack and all that stuff and saddle and all that. That was great because there's a lot of people you can go through there, and a lot of people have their personal packs on there, and like Amsteel guy and all these other guys, you can just see these little things that just can take up so much, you know, easier for packability and all that stuff. So that was mostly just accessories and all that. And like just, I felt the latitude sticks and all that, but that was just like a reassurance. I was going out there and I tried some other people's sticks and I kind of just was like, all right, this is what I'm going to go with this year. It's just, and all that. And I did get some stealth. You can never get enough stealth strip tape. So
for me, like getting to look at all the stuff, it's like, oh, this. So the Timberwolf Supply Co. They have this like energy drink stuff that's like this mushroom stuff, and there was like, there's no way in hell I'm gonna try that. Like, and I thought it was coffee because that's like what's marketed. It's like all this, you know, mushroom coffee, blah blah blah. Well, one of the evenings I may have had a few sodas. And the morning came awful quickly, and I was like, ugh. And Corey knows those guys, I guess, are out of Cincinnati. Logan, he runs the Run and Gun podcast. And I didn't catch the other guy's name, I'm sorry. But he's like, here, try one of these, it'll help you out. So I mixed it up, drank it, and it's like a pineapple flavor, and it was really good. Like it was a little chunky, like it didn't totally mix in all the way, so that was like one negative about it, but I think it helped me. It's got a little bit of caffeine in it, a little bit of, you know, good stuff, I guess. I don't know, I didn't really look too hard at it. I was like, will it help my hangover? Yes, okay, we'll give it a whirl. And that was good. So that was something that I was surprised about. I would never have checked that stuff out otherwise. And then I made the mistake of trying one of those stealth e-bikes, and I knew, like, from Tim Clark and him using his bike at the Patreon hunt, and then him getting one of the stealth bikes and talking about how great it was, these single speed mid drive bikes. And I've talked with Dieter, he was on the podcast, and I've talked with him about the bikes and things. But man, like, that's cool. Like, now I'm just trying to figure out, like, what I'm going to have to do to get one of those. Like, it's on my list of things. Super cool. Did you happen to ride one of those, or have you messed with e-bikes before?
I did ride that one. I don't know what one I rode itself. I think it was like the price point was like their baser model, but it had the rack in the back that could pull the trailer kind of thing.
Yep.
And I did ride it. Yeah, it was. Like, I had some like cheap Chinese ones I've driven and all that. This was way better, I think. And then the direct drive, so that derailleur doesn't get messed up in like horn stock and all that. It definitely would be something that you like, don't bring your credit card with that. Cause like, I rode it, I was like, wow, this is really nice. But I got some more things on my to do list before I can drop that money on that. So, but dude, I can see how they would just be so like would it make me a better hunter? Maybe. I think you could say it would definitely enhance your mobility and all that, but it is a huge setback. But hey man, if somebody doesn't get a new bow, I mean, you have a 5-year-old bow, you don't need a new bow, that's like half the price of one of them. So I don't see the difference if you just splurge on one of them one year, and it's not like it's going to break it. You don't need a new e-bike every year. So.
Right. But I just mean, like, I was like, oh, how, you know, how cool could these be? Like, are they really that? And like how they work with, like, I figured it was just like, oh, you just do a throttle, but it's just like the pedal assist, you're just going. And then all of a sudden it's just freaking flying. And
yeah, you're up to 20.
You're not going that fast, but it seems like it's like effortless. And I was, riding it was a mistake. You're right. You know, because it's like now I feel like I really need to get one of those. The Spartan Forge, did you check that out or get to go see the new LiDAR and all that stuff?
Yeah, I kind of was like backseat. What he was like showing somebody else, and I adapted Spartan Forge into my arsenal from the last hunt, the Patreon hunt, and I've been going kind of in there. I do have like Onyx for like kind of more out west stuff, and I think this year I'll probably be more Spartan Forge than anything. So,
well, I remember we were like getting food or whatever, and you were telling somebody else, and I don't know if it was Spartan Forge or what it was, but you were like, I've now, like, I used to just do all the e-scouting on my phone, and now I do it on the computer, and it's like,
oh, yeah,
like literally a night and day difference being able to look at it like to scale. And like when I said it on here before, but there was one spot down in Ohio that Jake Bush was talking about. And when I looked at it on the map, and especially when I looked at it like in person, like it shapes up one way. Like you think you know what it looks like. And then when you peel all that back and you're just looking at the topo or whatever, and you can put it in 3D mode, and it's like now it stands out like a sore thumb. You're like, oh, okay, now I know why he was talking about that. Because like on your phone, it's hard to see, it's hard to do. And like with those 3D modes, and now like with that LiDAR, with those, like Johnny was explaining like some of his spots, and he was showing me like the like little bits of micro terrain that you can't just see or pick up. And it's kind of like the whatever they call it for you fishing guys, the like side scanning or whatever. Like where you can just really like see what the whole bottom of the ocean or the whole bottom of the lake looks like. You can see those like micro terrain features that these deer are using, because that's what gives them the advantage, where normally you maybe wouldn't see that. But yeah.
Like a huge thing, like some of the flatter ag country that I come from, like 3 foot in elevation change could be a huge elevation change for this area, and they'll take advantage of that. Mature deer will take advantage of just 3 foot of drop, and Spartan Forge can definitely pick that out. And then with the new all that, you can tell from oak flats, from the leaves of the tree. I mean, just the like, if you can just learn the leaves of trees, just like the quick basic of Michigan or whatever what area you're in, you can learn so much from just the and you can take some boots off the ground or just go right to the oak flats or, you know, some of our areas where some of the farmers take out all the mature trees, you know, they forest them, and then there's only so many oaks. Well, if I didn't have such a small parcel, if I had maybe a larger parcel, I could just go and go, okay, there's two oaks here, two oaks here, two oaks there, instead of just being all green patch from every previous scouting apps and all that. So that it is crazy that like the Onyx has literally, and other platforms have literally changed the game of public and all that. I screw trail cameras. Everybody's saying trail cameras are ruining everything, but I'm not saying it's ruining it, but like, I think that mobile app has killed more deer than a lot of other things.
Oh, yeah.
It came out.
Why do you think that is? I have my own opinions, but like, why would you say that?
A lot of people are scared to get lost. That's the biggest thing, is a lot of people are scared to get lost in unknown terrain. And that's like, I've been talking to a lot of people, like, I think for if you're a newer hunter, and like I'm not saying I'm a super advanced woodsman, but if you learn woodsman before you actually try to learn deer studies and all that, you will become so much better at this, because you don't have to worry about that. Because when that technology fails or something, you know where you're going to be at, and then you just know what you need to find. You know what I mean? It's just how many people can tell the difference between a red oak and white oak? it's got to be in a small percentage. You know, I don't want to take away from people. There's probably a lot of people screaming at me over in the car radio right now, but I there's a lot of people that out there that don't know the difference. And just, I just think that would be a better beneficial to learning out how to find the best rep spots, how to make a mock scrape and all that. Yeah, they're great tools, but I think learning the woods is going to be way better for you. You know, you put in unknown territories, and I'll use the Patreon hunt as last time. I had this oxbow, perfect oxbow. I think it would have been amazing all that. I get there, go up there, there's a bridge outing. I put all my eggs in basket in the oxbow. You go, what do you do now? I go, I just spent 3-4 weeks on this one spot and then all that. So what did I have to do? I had to go and learn. Like I could go the map, but I literally was like, I got to hunt an hour. So go to where you know where you're going to go, and then to get your feet on the ground and learn that, like, I can look at elevation change, but I can just know, okay, this drainage should go into a pinch or something and all that. So
yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is that, like, I think people were afraid to get lost. But I also think how it's hurt is, like, now there's all this information out there, and now you have access to all of this, like, right now. And everybody looks at those oxbows. Everybody looks at those, like, leeward facing points. They look at, you know, pinches and saddles and, like, all this stuff, where now you listen to podcasts and they say, don't go to the obvious thing on the map. Like, where before you'd be like, oh, it's so obvious. Like, you just go there and that's where the deer are going to be. But you were looking at like an atlas, or you were looking at some sort of, like, USGI topo that you had to, like, go online and purchase or find, you know, for the area, or a plot book to see what was public and what wasn't, especially, like, out of state. And now it's like everything is, like, at your fingertips, and you can go wherever you want. Like, there, and I think that that's, where in some ways, you know, it is, like, a detrimental, I guess, but in reality, it's, like, extremely empowering. And so for these guys that have the apps and they still hunt 100 yards off the road or 200 yards off the road, like, I feel like those are the guys that need to, like what you said, like, do a little bit of woodsmanship, like, figure out, like, how to really navigate with a compass, or, you know, use, like, terrain features to travel and, you know, things like that. So for you, from when you say that, it's really easy to say, like, oh, just learn woodsmanship. Like, how would you recommend people would do that? Like, what's the way to do it?
Well, number one thing, take a first aid class. Or not, that is the biggest thing I think people need to take advantage of. Take a first aid class and then be equipped with a first aid triage kit or anything. I think that is such a huge thing, is something happens and it can happen quick. My brother-in-law lost a finger coming down a tree stand. He got his ring snagged on a climbing stick. And he jumped off the last step and got his ring stuck and it lost his finger. Luckily, he was only 300 yards away from a neighbor and all that, and could run to his door. If he was 2-3 miles back, that's in a situation where that's when you start getting an infection. It wasn't bleeding, but stuff like that can happen instantaneously. Going out west, I know all it takes is one slip on a slee field and all that, and it'll cut through your pants so quick you don't even understand. It's like a razor knife, and you go one of them, and I think that's a great, I know it's not the woodsmanship, but I feel more confident going out in the woods knowing that I have just a first aid kit, or just a little, you know, I can make a tourniquet, but, like, just the knowledge of that, I think that's a huge thing, you know, because these, you know, going 2 miles deep is a normal thing now. So, and how many times do you have cell service going back there? Zero. And then how many times do you tell people where you're going? Never, because you never tell people where you're going. So that's a big thing. So know if you get put in a situation, you can handle it. And then I think like there is some survival class. I was a Boy Scout and an Eagle Scout too. So like I learned that stuff before I was a hunter. So I think that was, it's hard for me to turn that off. So just reading, I think best thing would just be reading about it and like going from it. Like don't go from it as a hunting aspect of it. Just go as reading terrain. And I think like if you wanted to like go really deep into like trapping, the way trappers look at the land, that would be a great way to look at woodsmanship and all that. I think them guys have a great knowledge of how animals and all that. Don't pigeonhole yourself to whitetails because, you know, that's how it goes. But I know there's great classes, great woodsmanship classes, and mostly more in northern Michigan because you kind of have ag down here. But maybe a weekend giveaway or something like that, that would probably be a great thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for me, the navigation part of it is like if you could find someone that does like a navigation class, like that would be. And one thing that I think I've talked about it on here maybe, but I get so frustrated with any of the apps. It doesn't matter if it's Spartan Forge, Basemap, Onyx, and we've all dealt with it. It's like it says you're going over here, and then you start to track, and like the track isn't going the way that it says you're facing, and like you end up walking in circles or whatever. Have you experienced that?
So out west, I personally didn't. I had a Garmin InReach with a Garmin Maps on there, but a fellow podcaster from a big group, he was using Onyx whatever app, I don't know that, and they were using the breadcrumbs on offline map, and that offline map, you know, was 30 to 40 yards off. Well, when you're trying to find a horse pass and 30 to 40 feet off and thick aspen, you know, trees and all that, that could be a million. You can't see it. You don't know where it is. So that could be the survival. I mean, the difference between spending a night out in the mountain than that. So, and in the whitetail woods, I don't think most of all the terrain I've known, I've can kind of backtrack myself and all that. I don't use track that much, just going in there and stuff. So, but I mean,
I use track everywhere. I'm really bad at like marking my waypoints though. And so I just have points everywhere, but I'm like, I don't know what this is. I don't know when I put it there. I don't know if it was an e-scout point, if it was a like in the field point, like I need to step that up. But what I do when that happens to me, because it happens to me a lot, and it's different with the different apps, like how often, like Basemap was really bad. It was all like the arrow was always pointing like the opposite way. So like I knew that if I turned my phone around 180 degrees, then it was pointing like the way, but that took me like 400 times of like going in the wrong direction. But what I'll do now is like, if that starts to happen to me, I'll stop. I forgot. I was just talking to somebody about this, about like getting lost, and not like lost, like, you know where you're at, but you're just like, I know that this is not the right way. Like I know where I'm and I know where I'm at, and I know I need to go that way, but I just can't do that. One way that I do that anyways, like if I'm well, I guess I do it at the end of this, but so I'll say, okay, well, I need to go to the creek, or like this creek crossing, or this is a place that I know is that's in the direction that I'm going. That's not that far away. I'll either drop a pin right there, or if there's a pin already there, I'll click on that. And all these apps have the ability to, that says go to pin. So I'll click on go to pin, and then I'll just follow that. But when I do that, is this is how you do navigation, even with a compass, but you'll go that way. You look and say, okay, it says go, you know, south or wherever the arrow points, but then I'll pick a tree like 60 yards up there and I'll walk to that tree and then I'll do it again. So you're not just looking face down at your phone, just following that mindlessly. I'm stagnant. I'm stationary. I look up and I say, go there, get to that point, reassess, make sure that I look, make sure my breadcrumb's going in the right direction. I am indeed going where I need to go. And then I'll do that leapfrog until I get to like a known point where I know where I'm at. And then I'll go. And if it happens again, or if I'm like, okay, I know that I'm at the creek, but I don't know exactly. Cause there's a spot where I've talked about it a lot, but I go through this cattail swamp. I get to this corner. I got to go through the cedar swamp to get to the creek, to go up this ridge. And so it's just a game of leapfrog for me. It's like, I need to go to the creek. Okay. Now navigate to the corner. Okay. Navigate to the one lone cedar in the middle of this cattail swamp. And then I can figure out like where I'm going from there. But that's what's helped me like so much. And that comes from, you know, regular map, like line of sight navigation, where you're going from terrain feature to terrain feature. And you have your azimuth and you say, okay, well, I'm going to go here. And like, to me, that I think helps tremendously, not only like from like a woodsmanship, but like from a confidence standpoint, like, cause it's real easy, like, to get shook. Like, if you're out there and it's like where you're like, God, I know that I'm here. And then you do that, like you make like three circles and you end up in the same spot and you're like, you start to get like freaking out a little bit, you know? And I mean, I guess Mr. Eagle Scout, he doesn't have that issue. He's just like, I do the witch and stick and I find some water. I start a fire by rubbing twigs together and, you know.
Like you said, like, if it's a bunch of lines on the map, like, if you can't read, you know, okay, I can tell the difference between this elevation and this elevation, there's going right there. And, you know, if you can't visually, because on some of the apps and all that, you look at it, it's all canopy. You can't tell the difference when you're looking at it from aerial view, and it's not going to help you with, there's no visual landmarks it's giving you. It's just giving you, you turn that topo on there. If you know how to read that, you go, okay, this is a drainage going into a spine. And then you physically, you're going down this drainage. Let's just say your marker ain't on and you're saying you're 30 feet over, but you know, you're in a drainage, but it's showing you on a high point. You obviously know that thing is not right. But if you're looking at it and go, all I see is a bunch of topo lines, then you're just screwed up. You're screwed. Because technology will fail, and it happens. And I think that's what some of this stuff, like we were talking with other gear, sometimes we're overcomplicating stuff. We're putting too much moving parts and, you know, technology and all this other stuff in there. Like, go back to the basics. I mean, sometimes it's not what the coolest, most expensive, like, I'd rather go with a small business guy that I can have a relationship with than a big box store and all that. But that's just because we can build off of that. But, and then it's like, sometimes you just overcomplicate stuff and it just needs to go back to the basics, I think. Cause I just think, dough in a can should come back, and that's all people should use, man.
I think, you know, from that, like, overcomplicating things, I think that's one of the, maybe the difficulties of a show like that, Mobile Hunters Expo, is because it's all so cool. Like, I was having a conversation, we talked about this a little bit earlier before the podcast, but with a guy trying to get into saddle hunting. And it's like, they reach out to me and say, hey, you know, what do you think about sticks? What do you think about platforms? What do you think about saddles? And to be honest with you, like, I don't think that there's a bad saddle, except for Hawk. But the rest of them, if you can get comfortable in any of them, you probably get comfortable in Hawk, you just might die. And I don't think anybody's ever died, but I mean, it's
go on some of them forums and you'll be really educated real quick.
it's I don't know, and maybe it's just me like being jaded, but it's not like I'm like they're trying to take money from the little guy. Like, no, I don't think so. I think they don't really care about their customers. But anyways, I think the platform things is about the same. I think all platforms, like, you can only make a platform in a handful of different ways. And we've kind of seen those different ways. And until somebody really innovates, all the platforms are going to serve their purpose. But Styx, on the other hand, like, everybody wants to be the coolest, to be the lightest, to be the newest. And then everybody wants to buy them because of the marketing. And then they want to bitch because it doesn't like meet up to whatever the marketing said. And I think that kind of goes into that overcomplicating thing. Like, it doesn't matter. I think in this like Amazon-esque world that we live in, we want to be able to order them today, have them tomorrow, and we want free returns for 30 days with our money back. We want to be able to try everything like immediately and send it back immediately. And with where we're at least at this point, and I think we're, again, in echo chamber, like, everybody wants the newest, the latest, the greatest. But to your point about woodsmanship, like, we don't want to be out in the woods. We want to – I love the podcast that I did with Cody Rich and talking to him about gear, where he says that guys can't control the woods. They can't control the outcome, but they can control their gear. And so that's what they would rather focus on, because they're going to be, you know, so locked in that they have the best, so that they can have a big ego about having the best gear because they did all the research and they did all that. But if they spent half of that time in the woods, you know, they would have a much better experience. And I think that's how, with all the gear and the mobile hunting stuff, I think that that's how, kind of how we overcomplicate it. Right. I mean, what do you see?
Yeah. I guarantee there's probably a dozen people I know personally that are going to go out this season with a Lone Wolf Salt, I think that is, and the Salt Styx, and they will kill a monster in it. And that stuff has been out for what, a decade at least? And it's not about, yes, it's nice to shave off whatever on my back, but do I need to shave off 2 pounds if I'm only going 200-300 yards into the woods? I mean, that's my personal, I'm not picking on it. That's my personal opinion or my personal scenario. I'm only going 300-400 yards off the road on most of my leases. Like, I can't go any deeper. I got property lines and all that. So I don't need to shave off all these ounces and all that. So, like, am I going to buy nice stuff? Probably. Yeah. But it's not because I'm buying it because it's the latest, greatest. I'm on it to last, you know. I'm looking at warranties and all that, and it's not about bells and whistles. Sometimes it's not about the cool, you know, this one can fold up to a pocket set, a knife basically, or whatever stick. And I just want stuff that's going to last. There's longevity is a huge thing with me, and American made, small business, and just a personal relationship. If I can call some of these companies and I call and I can talk to the person that actually designed this and go, yo, this is not working. Why is this on? Or this hitch is on your saddles or not right. And you can talk to somebody about that. That's a huge selling point to me. And like, then go back to the standpoint of people just overcomplicating stuff. It's just like, man, I do a lot of tournament archery, and I thought it was, I need the latest, greatest sight. I need the latest, greatest bow. I need all this stuff. And I go out there and get destroyed every time. I'm like, what the hell? Why am I, dude, I just spent like $4,000 on this boat. What the hell? And I go and I joined a club, and I got this guy, his bow, probably like $600 with everything on there. Smoked me by like 20 points. And that's huge in archery world, 20 points. And he can just use what he has. He doesn't need to buy new stuff. He just knows his equipment and he can use it. So if you can, everybody can implement that, not worry about, oh, well, this one that came out with the latest, greatest new sticks, I need that. Well, that's what the half these time people go in there. They set up one time before they go in the woods, and then they're dinking around with the new equipment every freaking time they go in the woods. And then by the time they get done with the season, they're buying a new stick when they're just gotten comfortable with it. Now, you know, they're just crutching yourself. I don't know. And I'm just not a weight weenie, man. And some of these people are so worried about ounces. It's just insane, dude. Like, just put the stuff on your back and find the deer, man.
Yeah, I think, I honestly think, like, the whole thing comes full circle to what you said earlier about, like, the inches and the taxidermy. And, like, that is, I think, what's most important, right? So Tim Clark goes out, kills a, you know, 8-point. You kill, you know, a family of deer. Josh kills a deer. Jason kills a spike. You know, what bow was Tim shooting? You know, what sticks did Josh have?
I couldn't tell you.
Doesn't matter at all. You know,
couldn't tell you.
But it was all about the hunt and the fun, mm-hmm. and, you know, enjoying the woods and enjoying the time out there. And I think people argue so much about the gear. Like, you got the lone wolf guys, you got the tethered guys, you got the latitude guys, trophy line guys, you know, cruiser. Oh, it's the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. And you get these camps where it's just like, oh, you know, these people, oh, he just piles on. He only cares about this. And it's like, I bet you, if you guys hunted together, you would have a ball, right? You know? We just want to make things, we just want to have something to complain about.
Yeah.
That's all. Because, you know, hunting season's only, what, 60, 70 days a year. So the other 300 days, like, we have to have something to talk about. And we can't talk about, like, what we're doing right. We got to complain about what everything that we wish would happen, or what's wrong with this company or that company, or, oh God, let's not talk about broadheads, right? Like, it's just,
yeah. I can tell you that my last season was unsuccessful, and 100% of none of it was equipment. It was nothing. No equipment failed at all on me. It was all me. I failed to capture my goal. And I, like, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, I passed some ones that, no, I'm chasing a different, I was chasing something, but, it was all me. It was, I can't blame no gear, no failure. I didn't put my knock underneath my D loop or anything like that. But, but it was all me. So if I focused, like, and like you said, like, going back to the basics and worrying about just, like, what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and who I'm hanging out with. And I think that's a great thing. And I think a lot of people will learn, like I said about target archery, you're not going to get a better archer unless you're hanging out with good archers. You want to be a better hunter, go hang out with some, go to a club, go to an archery club, just pick, go to one of these shows. You meet somebody. I met William, dude. That's an awesome dude, man. He's a stud. That guy's a stud. And I was just talking with him for 5 minutes. I learned something new. You go to these shows like this, you'll meet people like that. And these guys were offering me to come hang out with them and doing all this stuff. And like 5-10 years ago, like, if you were, it was like a sacrilegious thing to even ask where you were hunting at. These guys were like, hey, man, you come out this Thanksgiving, man, I'll take you anywhere you want to go. We'll have a great time. And you just don't get that. And I just think the camaraderie is so much more important than these antlers and all that. And don't get me wrong, I'm still going to chase big deer and choose big deer. But I think there's more important things people have to worry about and all that. And like, when we went and go chase my, or get my deer out of the woods up the hunt, like, I've never laughed that hard from these guys It was insane. I couldn't even gut a deer because I was laughing so hard. And that was the one of the most important things. And that, and I went out west on a horseback bear hunt and killing them two doe or button buck, whatever you want to call it, was way more funner in my eyes than that out west one. And I killed a bear out there too. And that was a cool experience, but I had more fun in the woods laughing with them guys than going out there and doing that stuff.
Yeah. And I, again, like, go check out Jacob Emery's reel that he did, and you'll see these names in the industry, you know, guys that you've watched their YouTube videos, you've listened to their podcast, you'd recognize them, you know, right off of the bat. And the answers are all basically what you just said. It's about the people and not about like gear, inches, or whatever. So for you, and like for the listeners who aren't familiar with you, if they've made it this long, like your podcast, like what's the basis of your podcast?
So, like I said, I'm not like a Dan Infall or Jake Bush or anything. I'm just learning like you guys. Like there is no golden key. There is no secret sauce that will make you successful. And I just kind of just go from there and pick people's brains and kind of just go and just have organic conversation. We don't really script stuff and like kind of go from there. We kind of just have an organic conversation and we're just kind of growing. And I just think that I kind of missed out on hunting in my, you know, earlier years. Like I did it, but I didn't really get into it. And I think that, you know, I was kind of a lost kid in a sense. And I think that if I tell everybody, if I do 1,000 episodes and I get one new person in the woods to fall in love, like I see the woods, then it's worth it to me. And that's all, that's my whole objective of the show. It's not to be, I don't want to do a podcast for a living. I don't want to, you know, I don't want sponsorships and all that. Like if they come, they come. I'm just saying, I'm not chasing that. I'm chasing the next story. Because some of these guys, like, you'll never, ever know they were a huge, great hunter. You'll never know. Some of these guys just keep themselves. So if I can pry them to come on my podcast and they just tell me a little bit about their world, it's an awesome, beautiful thing. And it's never too late to start hunting. So if there's any new hunters or on the fence, you don't have to go out there and spend $1 million to go out there and do it. Like, I'm not the okayest hunter like that aspect of it, but like, you can get it done with the basics. And I think the basics is all you really need, to be honest. So like, don't let all these new bows and all that scare you and all that stuff. Just get what works for you and just come on and evolve with us, and just we'll just go from there.
So since John's not been around building this house lately, I've been forgetting to ask this. What is your bow setup? Like, what are you shooting this year?
So this year I'm actually going to be using this white bow. It's a target bow, and it's a Matthews TRX 34. So, and then I'll be using the recurve too, and that's a Elite Origin. So I will kill a deer with this Elite this year, the traditional bow. That'll be my first trad bow kill when I get it. But it'll be a Matthews TRX 34 with a ultra view sight and some deer cross archery arrows, and with a triple mechanical broadhead. And I'm only shooting 430 grains, and that's all you need. Can't change my mind, bro.
Well, thanks so much for coming on here and just kind of like recounting the expo and talking a little bit of gear and deer hunting and all of that. You just talked about like your podcast and what's the basis of it. So if people are trying to follow along with you and they want to hear more from you in the podcast, like where can they find you?
So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, basically every format. I haven't had a request that we don't play on yet. So basically anywhere where you listen to a podcast, and then every social media. We got a TikToker, we got the Facebook, we got the Instagram, we even have a Twitter and that. But YouTube, we got a YouTube. It doesn't have a lot of long format stuff, but definitely go check that out. That's what I'm gonna be focused. This whole season will be more focused toward YouTube, but interaction, Instagram is my number one. If you guys really want to contact me and complain about what I said on this podcast, go ahead and tell Adam first, but then just message me.
And that's a Generations the Hunt podcast. He's terrible at that. So
yeah, I need to work on this podcast stuff. That's why I'm here. You're supposed to tell me, teach me.
So, but yeah, I appreciate it, man. So we'll wrap it up. But thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me.
No problem.